Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Megillah Daf Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We turn to the top of Daf Ches. In the outside margin, we present a title or topic heading that we call No Say. And you'll notice that in the Gemara itself, we will be beginning with a new Mishnah. In fact, on this Omid of Gemara, you'll find several Mishnayos that appear. In our topic heading in the outside margin, we've written, Chiluk bein mudar hano mechavero lemudar mimenu maichol. We will be addressing the topic of one who vows not to benefit his friend. So he wants to withhold benefit from his friend. The Mishnah will talk about two types of benefit withholding. One is where there is an across-the-boards withholding of benefit, where A vows not to bestow or grant any benefit to B. Another scenario, or case, is where A vows not to benefit B in terms of food-related benefit. The Gemara will deal with what is the difference between the two. A second point, Loma Drisas Horegel. Why is easement rights, the right to cross a fellow's property, Dovar Shekol Kach Mizuri, something that is in general perceived as something of a very minor type benefit, in other words, my right to cross someone's property or the benefit that I receive in crossing someone's property, is considered a very inconsequential type of benefit, and nevertheless, Nesar b'mudur hano, if one vows not to entitle his friend to receive benefit, even that type of right will be withheld. In other words, if A vows not to grant any benefit to B, B will not be able to even take a shortcut through A's property. Turning to the Mishnah, Ein bein hamudar hano mechavero lemudar mimenu maichol. There is really no difference between someone who vows not to benefit his friend in general versus someone who vows not to benefit his friend in terms of maichol. Maichol, in general, would be something we'll say food-related. Ela drisas haregel. One difference would be that if A vowed not to bestow benefit to B, if it, the nature of the vow was a withholding of hano, then B could not cross through A's property. However, if the vow was a food-related withholding type benefit, then B would be able to cross through A's property. Another difference would be the kelim she'ein oisin bohen oichel nefesh. If A vows not to benefit B, would B be allowed to borrow non-food preparatory vessels? For example, a lawnmower. A lawnmower is a type of vessel, article that's not, that has no association with food preparation. So if the nature of the vow was no benefit, so of course B could not borrow A's lawnmower. However, if the nature of the vow was a food-related benefit, that which was withheld, then B could borrow A's lawnmower. the Gemara points out, ha le'inyan kelim she'isin bohen oichel nefesh. However, with regard to vessels that are associated with food preparation, pots, utensils, cutlery, that type of vessel would be prohibited for B to receive from A under any circumstances, whether it was a mudar hano or a mudar mimeno maichal. With regard to both of those, they are considered zev as a shoven, both are equally prohibited. Drisas haregel. The Gemara asks, but holo kapti inshi, people don't mind. It's not something that this idea of an easement right or the ability to shortcut through someone's property, this type of thing that in general is something people don't pay attention to. It's of almost no consequence to individuals. And therefore, if a vow is issued to withhold benefit one from the other, this should not be included in the prohibitions. So the Gemara answers, Omar Rava, Ha-Moni, our Mishnah that does indicate that Drisus Aregel would be included in a vow of prohibition. The Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Eliezer. The Omar, Rabbi Eliezer's position is Vitur Osir B'mudur Hano. Vitur means something that people in general give up on or pay no attention to. Vitur is an expression where someone says, just keep the change, people don't mind. So things that fall under that category of vitur in the realm of Isur Hano, when someone wants to prohibit his friend from receiving Hano, you may look at it as if things get magnified. And as a result of that, Rabbi Eliezer holds even things that are of an inconsequential nature, like a shortcut possibility, that would be withheld or prohibited in the case of a vow to prevent benefit. Ein bein nedarim l'nedavos ella. There is no difference between nedarim and nedavos, and in general, when you see these terms, they are associated with someone who vows to bring a sacrifice to the Beis HaMikdash. So in the course of this particular Gemara, we'll limit our discussion to that situation. So there are two ways that a person can accept upon himself voluntary offerings of sacrifices. One is through neder, and one is through nedava. So the Mishnah points out there's no difference between them. Elo shehanedorim chayov ba'achriyusan. If someone took upon himself a sacrificial obligation through an expression of neder, which we will define in the Gemara, but in the meantime we'll just use the term the Mishnah presents. If anything happens to the item that he had designated in his neder, the speaker, the person, is then chayav b'achriyusan. He has to make good on it. In other words, if the animal died or got lost, he has to provide a replacement. Unedavos eino chayav b'achriyusan. If the style or language through which he accepted the obligation upon himself, this voluntary offering, if he did it through a nedava style, then if something happens, he is not duty-bound to make good on it. There is no guarantee that he builds into his offering. The Gemara points out, though, through an inference, ha le'inyan bal ta'achir zev zeh shoven. The Mishnah pointed out what the differences are. We can infer, though, that regarding the issue of delay, that's bal ta'achir, nedarim and nedavos are the same. Let us say a word about bal ta'achir. There are numerous opinions as to at what point one is in violation of this offense called Baal Ta'achir. We'll just use one example, one of maybe as many as 5-6 different shitas that appear in Maseches Rosh Hashanah as to what exactly Baal Ta'achir is. But if a person accepts upon himself an obligation to bring a sacrifice to the Beis HaMikdash, if he allows 3 holidays to go by and still has not brought his offering, he would be considered in violation of Baal Tacher. Literally, Baal Tacher means do not delay. At what point is one considered in violation of having delayed? So, with the passage of 3 holidays, if that much time goes by, if he still hasn't brought it, he is considered in violation of this offense. The Gemara is pointing out that it makes no difference whether the form of obligation was through the neder expression or the nedova expression. Either way, if he doesn't bring his offering, bring his gift, a sacrificial gift to the Beis HaMikdash within the allotted time, he will be in violation of Baal Tacher. Tanan Hossam. We now have a Tanaic source. As you can see, it's framed off as we do in our Gemara marking system in order to distinguish or set apart Tanaic quotes from the rest of the Gemara text. This source will actually spell out that which we have not done till this point, the difference between neder and nedova as far as the language is concerned. A zehu neder, what is the nature of a neder? What constitutes a vow that is classified as neder? Ha'oimer, one who says, Hare olai oila, I am accepting upon myself the obligation of bringing a korban ola. Ezohi nedava, what constitutes a nedava? Ha'omer, one who says, Hare zu ola. This is a case where he specifies an animal. He doesn't say, upon me is an obligation. Rather, he says, I designate this animal as an ola. Uma bein nedarim l'nedavos. What legal difference is there between these two? Nedarim mesu o nignivo ovdu. In the case of nedarim, which, just let us remind ourselves, that's a case where a person accepted upon himself he accepted upon himself to bring an ola. If something happens to it, mesu, it dies, nignivu, it gets stolen, o ovdu, or lost, chayav b'achriyuson, the speaker, the person, has to make good on it. He's built a guarantee into his obligation. Nedavos, in the case of nedavos, though, if any of these events befalls the animal, nedavos, let's just remind ourselves, that's where he designated a specific animal as a sacrifice, then mesu o nignivu o avdu, eno chayav bachrison. If anything befalls the creature, then the owner is not obligated to make good on it. Mino hanimili. From where do we know that in the case of a neder, namely hare olai, that creates a guarantee on the part of the owner? In other words, that binds the owner to make good on it if something happens. So, Tano Rabbanan, we have a Tanaic source that will explain. V'nirtza loi l'chaper olav. That is a posuk in the context of the bringing of a korban oila. Rabbi Shimon Omer, es she'olov chayov b'achriyuso. That which is upon him. The posuk used the word olov. Olov means upon him. That which is upon you, you have to make good on if something happens. V'es she'eno olov, that which is not upon you, eno chayov b'achriyuso. If anything happens, you don't have to make good on it. The Gemara asks, my mashma, how do you see from the word olav that there is the acceptance of a guarantee? Omer Rav Yitzchak bar Avdimi, kivon de omar olai, when a person uses the expression, it is upon me, it's keman de to'in akaspe domi, it's as if it's upon his shoulders. We even use an English expression, yes, he is going to shoulder his obligation. This means that the obligation remains upon the person until he actually fulfills his word. So that if anything happens to the creature that he may have in his mind intended to bring as the sacrifice, it doesn't matter that the creature is no longer available. He never really designated a specific creature in the case of a neder. After all, what he said was, Hare Olai, it's upon me to bring the sacrifice. So if anything happens to any of the creatures that he may have had in mind, that doesn't relieve him of his obligation until he actually brings it. And that's all entailed in the term Olai. It's upon me, a personal obligation, as opposed to specifying a specific animal. The Rashi adds a little added angle to this. The Rashi Dibur Masel Es Sholov Chayav Bachriso Hochi Dorash Lei Lekra. Thusly, we are explaining the pasuk. Unirtz v'nirat uniratze loy nidro. He fulfills his obligation. L'chishchab ibrahen nirtze. When the animal is offered, he is thereby atoned for, so to speak, or he's thereby relieved. Avol mekami kapora, but until it's actually kapora is a reference to the actual offering, lo nirtze. He has not fulfilled his obligation. Ubeze korban amarti loch, when is it in fact so that only through the offering is he relieved? That kind of obligation that is upon him. That's what the pasuk is trying to convey when it uses the word olav, that which is upon him. He does not fulfill until he actually brings an animal. Continuing in the Gemara, we encounter a new Mishnah. We also have a topic heading, and you see that in the outside margin under the Nosei heading. Hevdel bein zav horoya shtayim lezav horoya shalosh. We will be discussing a topic concerning a man that has an emission that is called zav. If the emission appears on 2 days, one after the other, or two emissions on one day, he's called a Zav Haroya Shtayim. If he has this emission that comes forth from him on 3 days, three subsequent days, namely one after the other, or three rios on one day, three emissions on one day, that's called a Zav Haroya Shalosh. The Mishnah. Ein bein zav horoya shtei rios l'roya shalosh elo korban. The difference between the two would be that if one has two emissions, he does not he is not obligated in bringing a sacrifice. However, if he has three emissions, then after a 7 day cleansing period, or we call shiva nikiyim, after a 7 day period of no sightings, then he does, if it's a three sighting zav, he then, after the 7 days, brings a sacrifice. We infer, though, that if these are the differences, then regarding other matters, they are the same. However, with regard to their capability of imposing ritual impurity to Mishkov and Moshav, Mishkov are beds and Moshav are chairs, things that a person reclines on. We just gave a more or less literal translation, but things that are designed for reclining and for resting, those are included in Mishkov and Moshav. And Sfiras Shiva, we alluded to that just before, the need for counting 7 days after these sightings. They are the same, namely, whether it's a two-sighting Zav or a triple-sighted Zav. Both cases, there is a need for 7 days after the last sighting, 7 days of no sightings, after which he achieves purity, Tahara. The issue of, does he need, in addition to the taro, does he need to bring a sacrifice? So we said that if it's a zav that had three sightings, he also has to bring a korban. Mino hani mili de Tana Rabbanan. What is the source for these teachings? So before we go further, let's take a look at the outside margin. We have a mivneh. The mivneh features a diamond, because in the Gemara itself you'll see two diamonded expressions. They are Rabbi Simoi and Mizovo. Simun, we are noting that this marking, Hanitzrach Behemshech HaGemara, it will be beneficial to us later in the Gemara. In the Gemara discussion, we'll be able to use these diamonds as focal points in the discussion. We'll see a triangle. This represents, in this particular sugya, Hatzois Chilufios, alternatives to the halacha that we will be saying. In other words, the Gemara will present ideas or alternatives that are not actually true, but we have to see why they are not true. We had recently asked, what is the source for the teachings that we were exposed to regarding the Zav Baal Shterios versus the Shalosh? The first source, we see a Tanaic source with Rabbi Simoi in a diamond. Rabbi Simoi Oimer, Mono HaKosuv Shtayim V'Koroi Tomei. There is a posuk that uses the term Zav twice, and he's labeled Tomei, and Rashi quotes the psukim for your benefit. One posuk is in Vayikra Tes Vav Posuk Beis. It says, V'ish kie zav mibsaro zovo tomehu. So in that posuk, which you can see in the Rashi, and with the convenience hour of our markimars, you'll notice it's diamonded as well. You have the word shtayim diamonded there. And in that posuk, we've actually numbered 1 and 2, indicating the number of times the word zav, or a variation thereon, appears. And the posuk says he is tameh. There's another posuk that mentions the word zav, or a variation thereon, 3 times. And that's posuk gimel. And it says there, v'zois tieh, Tumasoi bezoivoi, ror besoro zovo, o hichtim besoro mizovo. So in that pasuk, as you can see with our numberings, the word zav appears 3 times, and he is called tomei. So that's what Rabbi Simoi is addressing right now. There's so one pasuk accounts mentions zav twice, and he's declared tomei v'shalosh v'koro tomei, and the other pasuk, as we just saw, uses the term Zav 3 times and proclaims he is Tomei. Ha-Ketzat. How are we to understand this after 2 or 3, if you're Tomei after 2? So it seems obvious that if you have 3 sightings, you would be Tomei. So Ha-Ketzat. How are we to resolve this or understand this? Answer. Shtayim L'Tuma. 2 sightings creates a Zav status. Zav status means that he'll then have to wait 7 days in order to achieve Tara. That's Shtayim L'Tuma. V'Shalosh L'Korban. If he has 3 sightings, then not only will he, of course, be Tomei, but he'll also have to bring a Korban, which is not the case if he had simply 2 sightings. The Gemara asks alternative suggestion, V'Amar, why not say, and these alternatives we're going to attempt to say that if you're looking for differences, maybe say thusly. Shtayim l'tuma v'lo l'korban. 2 sightings brings on a state of tuma, but no korban obligation. Shalosh l'korban v'lo l'tuma. And if he has 3 sightings, so he's obligated to bring a korban, but he is not tomei. The Gemara says that borders on the ridiculous. Amris, ad shalo ro'o shalosh ro'o shtayim. Before he got to 3, he saw 2, and at the sighting of 2, he becomes Tomei. So how can you even suggest that at 3 he would not be Tomei? The Amar, another suggestion, Shtayim l'korban v'lo l'tuma. Maybe sighting 2 emissions would result in a sacrifice obligation, but not ritual impurity. Shalosh af l'tuma. After sighting 3, he then he now becomes Tomei as a Zav. The Gemara says, Lo Salkadaitoch. That too, one cannot entertain as a possibility the Sanya. We have a Tanaic source. V'chiper olav hakoyim lefnei Hashem mi zoivoi. The mem in this pasuk mizovo indicates miktsas zovin. We should point out actually before we go further that when it says v'chiper olav hakoyim, we're talking about this pasuk is talking about a sacrifice that's brought. So we understand from the word mizovo miktsas zovin mevi'in korban, or miktsas zovin ein mevi'in korban. Some of the Zavim bring a korban, and some do not. Ha ketzad. Ro'o sholosh mevi. Shtayim eino mevi. If he has three sightings, he brings a korban. If he has two, he does not. We've dashed underline eino mevi for emphasis purposes. Oi eino ela, or maybe ro'o shtayim mevi. If he has two sightings, he brings a korban. Ro'o shalosh eino mevi. If he has three sightings, he does not bring a korban. The Gemara says that possibility doesn't exist. Amris ad shaloi ro'o shalosh ro'o shtayim. If you don't get to three unless you go through two, and if after two he is obligated in bringing a korban, he certainly remains obligated if he has a third sighting. So we have two sources that indicate, or from which we learn, that three sightings results in the bringing of a korban. Is it necessary to have both of these Tanaic sources? The Gemara says, "V'itzdirich Rabbi Simoi, v'itzdirich Mizovo." I need both of these sources, and it's really at this point that we can benefit from the diamonds in our marking system. As the Gemara says, we need the Rabbi Simoi, so you have a very quick reference to the source that the Gemara is referring to, as well as you have a quick reference to the source that the Gemara calls Mizovo, namely the second diamonded expression. So the Gemara explains, "De'i mid Rabbi Simoi, had I had just the Rabbi Simoi source, have amino ki kushyon, I would have thought, or there would have been a possibility to think like the question that the Gemara raised, namely that two sightings results in a korban and no tuma. Three sightings creates an additional level, namely, in addition to the korban, he is now also tame. That's what I would have had room to think had I just had the Rabbi Simoi source. Komash molon mizovo. Therefore, I need the mizovo source that tells me that only after three sightings is there a korban obligation. V'i mizovo, had I had just the mizovo source, lo yodano kamo ri'ios, I would not have known how many ri'ios causes these different obligations. Let's take a look at the Rashi. Lo yodana kamrios. Hai miktsas demashmei akro. We mentioned that the word mizovo, the mem, is a letter indicating partial. So in the source we saw some zavim, not all zavim. So this idea of some zavim are chayev in a korban says, "Hai miksas demashma me'akro lo yodinon ma'hi." I don't know how many that is. O shalosh v'arba is a distinction being drawn between three sightings versus four sightings, namely that only a four sighting person would bring a korban and not a three. Oi, or is it shtayim v'shalosh, or is the partial zavim that bring a korban is three, but two do not. So from the mizovo source alone, I would not have known anything with regard to the numbers. Therefore, I need Kamash Malon de Rabbi Simoi. Therefore, I need the Rabbi Simoi source that established that the distinction is between two and three. The Gemara goes on with a question focusing on the fact that we darshened the word mizovo that was found in Perek Tezvov, Posuk Tezvov. V'hashpad amris mizovo l'drosha. We turn our attention to another Posuk, Posuk Yud Gimel in Perek Tezvov, where the word mizovo appears as well. V'chiyitar hazav mizovoi my darshes bay. This Posuk is cited in the inside margin. We've included it, Vayikra Tezvov Posuk Yud Gimel, to get a flavor of the Posuk. Let's read it on the inside margin. It says there, V'chiyitar hazav mizovoi v'sofar lo shivas yomim l'torosoi, V'chibes begodov, v'rochatz besoro b'mayim, chayim, v'toher. Posuk is referring to a case where a zav is now, gets the clear sign, so to speak. He has had his no more sightings. He won the, there's a counting of 7 days, at which point he immerses his clothing and his body in a mikveh and achieves tara. So the question right now is, the word mizovo in that posuk, what are we to derive from that? Just like we saw in Posuk Tezvov, the word mizovo was darshan, what about in this posuk? So the Gemara answers, Ahumi boyle lichidisanyo, I need it for the following teaching. V'chi yitar hazav. That tells me, lichishe yifsoik mizovoi. That means that he does not immerse himself in the mikveh until he counts. So what happens is that when the flow, when the emissions stop from his body, he then counts 7 days, and only after that does he immerse in a mikveh. So far, we've darshan the expression v'chiyita hazav. Now, the word that we were really focusing on in why this brice is brought in, here you have it, mizavo, v'loi mizoivoi v'nigoi. In order to explain this, we recommend looking at the Rashi. There is quite a bit of background information that's provided. What is the situation of what is described here, v'lo mizovo v'nigo? So let's look at the Rashi. We have a little star provided at the point we want to start our reading. You'll notice on the first wide line under the Gemara in the Rashi text, Mizovo velo, mizovo uminigo. Shim hoyo zav umitzor. Imagine a person had experienced tzoras, which is another form of tumah that's characterized in many cases by a certain white spot developing on one's skin, and a kohen declares him to be a potential, or a potential mitzora, or a mitzora. Let's say the person not only had been a mitzora, but also experienced these zav emissions. Uposak mizovo v'loi nisrap adayim minigo. The flow of the ziva emission stopped, but the white spots on his flesh have not disappeared or shrunk yet, thereby causing him to still be classified as a mitzora with all that entails. So right now we're describing a person who had been both simultaneously a zav and a mitzora. The flow of ziva stopped from him, these emissions stopped, but the mitzora status remained. V'sofar, and he counts. In other words, we mentioned just a moment before that when a person experiences these emissions, at a certain point, when they stop, he then counts 7 days, which we call Shiva Nikiyim. So we have a person that is, in effect, counting Shiva Nikiyim from the cessation of these emissions while he is still a Mitzora. So now the Rashi explains the Chiddush. Ein omrim lo, we don't say the following, and we use a singular phrase marking in the Rashi to signify what we do not say. We don't say ein svirozu nikius ad shitar af midigo. We don't say to him, well, that your counting really is useless until the nega is the tzoras, also departs. Ella, rather, what is the case? Moinev ha'ilich miyad. As soon as the emissions of the ziva stop, he does a counting. The oiloi lesfiras zoiv. It counts. He has in effect fulfilled his counting obligation. It's true that a person like this is still unfit to eat sacrifices, to go into the Beis HaMikdash. He is still a very impure individual, being that he is a Metzora. The question you may have asked, and which we are preempting, is that, well, if he's such a Tomei individual, of what benefit is there to his counting the Shiva Nikiyim from the Ziva? So we will explain. We tell him that even though the Tzoras is still upon you, if you counted 7 days from the cessation of the Ziva emission, you get credit. And then when the good day comes that the Tzoras actually disappears from the individual, Yitboil Miyad Tevila Rishona Shel Mitzoira Vhi Oiloi Litvilas Nigoi Vizoivoi. Before we can really go too much further, just another word of introduction. Rashi just made an allusion to a tefila rishona. Tefila rishona is a first tefila. When you say first, it implies there's a second. So in the case of a mitzora, the procedure is that when the kohen declares that the discoloration has decreased in size or has disappeared, then the mitzora, this is a point that's regardless of the ziva discussion, but a standard mitzora will then have a 7 day waiting period, which starts with a tevila rishona, and then 7 days later a second tevila in a mikveh, second mikveh immersion. Going back to our zav, this concurrent zav mitzora individual, who we described before as having completed the emissions, waited and counted 7 days of non-ziva flow while still being a mitzora, we tell him that the counting was of benefit because when the tzoras departs, even though as far as from the mitzora aspect of things, he still has another 7 days to count for tzoras purposes, his 7 days of counting for ziva purposes has been fulfilled. He can therefore, when he immerses in the mikveh for that first tzoras immersion, it counts for his required zav immersion as well. You'll ask, but still he's called tomei. However, there is an immediate benefit, and this is what Rashi goes on to say. Vinitar, we've scribble underlined this word because this is really the focus of our attention. We're dealing right now with what benefit does that immediate immersion have as a result of his having counted the 7 days for the ziva. Vinitar milatame mishkavu moshav ulatame klicheres behesit kedin zav. He now will not impart tuma to the beds and chairs, the vessels designed for reclining, and he also will no longer cause tuma to earthenware vessels through what's called tumas hesed. A zav is somebody that is actually a very exceptional case. In general, a kli cheres, an earthenware vessel, does not become tame through contact with it from its outside, from its outer side. However, in the case of a zav, let us say he had a stick that he was carrying under his arm, and with the other end of the stick, he moved an earthenware vessel. That would be an example of tumas hesed. Being that he is a zav, that earthenware vessel becomes tome, and that's a kind of tuma unique to a zav. We'll call it a special zav power. His immersion in the mikveh at this point will then relieve him of this tumah communication. So just to review the points, of what benefit you'll ask is this zav immersion in the mikveh, which is constitutes his tefillah rishonah for the mitzoras as well. It now relieves him of, he's no longer metama mishkav u'moshav, and he's not going to be metama kli cheres behesed either. V'yafal pi, shetzorach l'sfiras shiva l'tzoroso, l'inyin achilas kotshim u'tfilas shniyo, even though he needs another 7 days because of the tzoras status that he had been in, and that is in anticipation of allowing him afterwards to eat sacrifices, and also it triggers his ability to do the second immersion for the tzoras purposes. Kidichtiv b'mitzora v'rochatz b'mayim v'tor v'achar yovo yalmachem v'yoshem v'chusa oil shvas yom v'yom shvi galchiz kol osaro v'rochatz es b'sor b'mayim. Those are the psukim that indicate the need of a mitzora to do a double tevila, one on the first day and another one on the seventh day. The Rashi now goes over the main point. Ahani tvilo kamaisa, the first immersion that this mitzora did, this mitzora who had also had been a zav concurrent with his tzoras, the tvilo kamaisa that he does will be beneficial, will be effective. L'taharo milatame mishkav u'moshe v'kli cheres behesed. And why is all of that so? Because he had done his counting of the Shiva Nikiyim that were necessary because of the Ziva in the midst of his Tzoras. So that we see that the counting of the 7 days of Shiva Nikiyim for Ziva is effective even while he was a Mitzora. Now, all of this, believe it or not, is contained in this drosha from the word mizovo, which we saw in the Brisa, 4 lines from the bottom of the Gemara, and we can go back to it now, that mizovo simply says, velo mizovo v'nigo. In order to enable him to count the 7 days, it is sufficient that the zav flow stopped, even though he still is in the midst of his nega, his tzoras. We continue, Mizovo v'sofar, that's also in the Pasuk. Limeid al-zav baal shtei riyos, shiton sviras shiva. This teaches me that a zav who had 2 sightings is required to count the 7 days of non-sighting, we call shiva nikiyim. The Brisa raises the question of, well, what do I really need a pasuk for? Valo dinhu. If through logic, I could come to that conclusion. In mitama mishkav u'moshav, if a baal shtei ri'os is capable of communicating tuma to beds and to chairs, and by the way, that's a very high level of tuma, because those beds and chairs, when they become tame, they will be able to communicate tuma to a person who comes into contact with them. So we're saying that if a baal shtei rios is metama mishkav u'moshav, which by the way was a point that we saw at the very beginning of the Gemara after the Mishnah, where the Gemara pointed out that legabi mishkav and moshav, the zav baal shtei rios is just like a baal shalosh rios, and that he does communicate mishkav and moshav tuma. So if he's capable of doing that, lo yehi ton sviras shiva, doesn't it stand to reason that he'll need to have a 7-day waiting period? So at this point, there the Bryce is making an assumption that that which is capable of communicating tumas mishkav certainly will require a 7-day counting period. The Bryce responds, that's not so. The logic is faulty, and therefore I will need the pasuk to tell me that. Where is the fault in the logic? Shomeres yoim keneged yoim tochiach. There's a certain status that a woman can reach or can fall into, a certain category that a woman falls into, without getting into the many details that go into this particular discussion. Suffice it to say that there's a period in the female cycle that after which, after she is leaves her nida period, she enters what's called a ziva period, during which time we say that if she has a sighting of blood, she must observe that one day as a day of tumah, and the next day as well as a day of prohibition, of restriction. And if she passes the second day without any blood sighting, she is then muteris to her husband, and she's muteris, she's considered tahora. That is called shomeris yom keneged yom. What do we know about that situation? Well, the Braisa says, let the case of shomeris yom keneged yom tochich, let it prove that even if something or if someone does not need 7 days, he still could communicate Tumas Mishkov and Moshov, and as a result of that, to suggest that a Zav Baal Shtei Rios communicates Tumas Mishkov and Moshov simply based on the fact, as was implied. To suggest, let's go over that point again, to suggest that a Baal Shtei Rios needs Shiva Nikiyim simply based on the fact that he communicates Tumas Mishkov Umoshov, that's not true. And that's what we're going to see now in the Braisa. Shomeris Yom Keneged Yom Tochiach. That can prove otherwise. Shemetama Mishkov Umoshov. We know that she communicates Tumas Mishkov Umoshov V'eino Te'uno Sefiras Shiva. The af ato al tetame al zeh. So likewise, you should not be amazed at this, at the zav baal shtei rios, shafalpi shemetame mishkov umoshov, even though he may communicate mishkov umoshov, lo yehe ton sfira shiva, he wouldn't necessarily require a 7 day counting period, just like we said by the shemeres yom keneged yom. She doesn't have a 7 day counting period. We said she has a 1 day counting period after all said and done, and yet she is metama mishkov umoshov. Therefore, the zav baal shtei rios as well, he is metama mishkov umoshov. But I can't extrapolate from that. I can't draw conclusions that he would also metama also needs 7 days. Therefore, Talmud Lomar mizovo v'sofar. I need this pasuk that tells me mixas zovo v'sofar. That there are some cases of ziva that require counting. Limeid al zav baal shtei rios shitoun sfiras shiva. This tells me that if he's a baal shtei rios, he requires a 7 day counting period. Omer le Rav Popa Abaye, my shno hai mizoivoi de marbi be zav baal shtei rios. Umaishno hai mizovo dimemayit be zav baal shtei rios. The most recent brisa, which darshened the posuk from Vayikra, Perek Tezva posuk Yud Gimel, we saw the term mizovo, and this, in effect, included a zav baal shtei rios as requiring, we're including him in the requirement of the need to count 7 days. But we saw the same word darshan, albeit from a different pasuk, and there we excluded the zav baal shtei rios from something. There we excluded him from a korban. So this is confounding the Gemara, that how could it be the same word, the same word structure? When we say the same word, we are referring to two different psukim, though. It's the same word that appears in two different psukim. So how come in one pasuk it serves to include, and in the other pasuk it serves to exclude? The Gemara now has an answer, but the answer itself is a long answer, and we've indicated that with a long answer marking. You notice a tuf that's encircled to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. So we're going to be providing an answer for how this phenomenon could be. Omar Lei. Abaye answers Rav Papa, In salka daitoch, hai limute hu de'asa. If you want to suggest, or if you are to think, that regarding the issue of the countings, where we saw we were including the Shtei Re'iyah guy as needing Sfiras Shiva, if you were to think that he is being excluded, namely that the that if you're to think that a Zav Baal Shtei Re'iyos does not need Sfiras Shiva, Lishtok Kra Minei. The Pasuk should have simply not said a word, should have remained silent. In other words, not bring up the topic at all. And if the Pasuk would have remained silent, where would we have dreamed up the idea that a Zav Baal Shtei Re'iyos needs accounting? The Chitema, and if you try to say, I would have come up with it, the Chitema Asya Midina, that through logic, I would have thought that he needs to count seven, and therefore I need the Pasuk to exclude him. By the way, what would the logic have been? Well, we would have said that if a Shtei Re'iyos guy can mentama Mishkav u'Moshav, then certainly he requires 7 days of Nikiyim. And to that, you would have then said that, well, I need the Pasuk to say, no, he doesn't. That's all of that's not true. Shomeris Yom Keneged Yom Tochiach. The case of the Shomeris Yom Keneged Yom that we saw at the top line of this Ovid, that would prove otherwise. In other words, here's a case of someone who is also Mitama Mishkov Umoshov, the Shomeris Yom Keneged Yom, and yet there's no counting of seven. So there is no room to suggest that I would have had an Havamina to include the seven, the two Riyas guy in needing a Sfira, and then I would then have a Pasuk to exclude him. The Chitema, now if you want to say, but still, I don't want to use the Mizovo to include the Baal Shtei Re'iyos for counting, because on the grounds that Haimi Boyele Mizovo Velo Mizovo Minigo. I really need the Pasuk for something else. And it's not here to include. It's here to teach me the halacha of Mizovo and not Mizovo Minigo. That had to do with the issue of the a situation where a Zav needs to count. He's able to do the counting while he is still a Mitzora. But maybe, you know, maybe that's what the pasuk is for, and not to include a Baal Shtei Re'iyos. Well, if that's what the role of the pasuk was simply to, for the issue of the counting during Tzaraas, Im Kein Lichtoiv Kro, the pasuk could have said V'chi Yitar Hazav V'lishtok. And if the pasuk would have said that, I would have understood that it's sufficient that the flow, the emission stops, at that point he's able to count, even if he happens to be Mitzora. Mizovo Lomoli. Why does the Torah throw in this word? Limeid al Zav Baal Shtei Re'iyos Shiton Sfiras Shiva. This extra word, so to speak, is here. Its only role, as we've boxed this into a corner, the only possible explanation for this seemingly extra word is to tell me that with regard to the need for counting seven, I will include the Zav Baal Shtei Re'iyos. In general, though, regarding other things, specifically the issue of a korban, we saw, in fact, the word mizovo was exclusionary. But in this case, because I have no other plausible or reasonable explanation for the word mizovo, namely in Pasuk Yud Gimel, I have to come to the conclusion that with regard to counting 7 days, here we will include the Zav Baal Shtei Re'iyos. As we proceed in the Gemara, we encounter a Mishnah that focuses on the issue of Tzoras. The Mishnah says, Ein Bein Mitzora Musgar, Le Mitzora Mukhla, Ela Priya Uprima. A Mitzora Musgar is a situation where a person develops a discoloration on his flesh, and it's not clear whether he is a full-fledged metzora. So there is a waiting process that lasts a couple of weeks. Kohen is brought into the picture. He takes a look at it. He takes a look at the discoloration, and he says, "Well, muskar means to put the fellow away, to lock him away for a week, and then the Kohen after the week comes back, and if there is no change, so he stays another week in this state of muskar. And if at the end of the second week there is development of an increase in the size, or there's a white hair that grows in the middle of this skin discoloration, he is then labeled a muhlat, a definitive metzora. So we have two situations. One is a metzora in the waiting, and the other one is a definitive metzora. So the Mishnah says there's no difference between these two, ela priya uprima. Priya is the halacha that tells the metzora muhlat that his hair must keep growing. He's not allowed to cut his hair. And prima is a situation of his tearing of his garments. So a metzora muhlat practices priya uprima, not a metzora musgar. Ein bein tohor mitoch hezker l'tohor mitoch hechlit, ela teglachas v'tziporim. When one achieves tahara, in other words, when one exits the mitzora status, so the Mishnah is saying it doesn't matter if he's leaving mitzora status from his being locked away, from being in that waiting period, or he leaves the tzora status after having been a definitive mitzora. The only difference is this, the issue of a tiglachas, which is a full body hair removal or hair shave, body hair shave, and Tziporim is a process whereby two birds are brought by the Mitzora at the beginning of his purification, called purification week. So at the beginning of that week, he immerses himself in the mikveh and brings two birds. These birds are not sacrifices in the Beis HaMikdash, but will, for the sake of brevity, we'll simply refer to it as the bird aspect of his tahara. So the need for the tiglachas and the bird ceremony, this is necessary only for the person who is leaving a muhlat status and not a hezker status. The Gemara continues, Ha the inyan shiluach v'tumo zeh v'zeh shavin. As far as the issue of being sent out of the community, if you're dealing with a walled city, in the case of walled cities, the Mitzora is sent out of it, outside. Just like in the travels in the Midbar, a person who developed Saras was sent out of the camp of Israel. And we refer to that in other sugyas as being sent out of three machnos. The three machnos are machne Shechina, machne Levi, and machne Israel. He's sent completely outside. In the case of when they finally came into Eretz Israel, in the case of the walled cities, the Mitzora was sent outside the city. And we in our Gemara were pointing out it makes no difference if he's a Mitzora in a state of this, in this waiting state, or Mukhlad, he is sent out of the city. And also with regard to the type of tumah that he creates, they are the same. We might say a word about the type of tumah that a mitzora creates, something very unique to a mitzora, and that is, unlike all other people who are alive and are experiencing tumah, they do not communicate tumah, let's say, through the air. If one is in an enclosed airspace, in a house, let's say, if someone is a mitzora, as opposed to all other types of tumah, if he is a mitzora and someone else is in the house at the same time the mitzora is there, the other party becomes tome. So that a mitzora communicates tumah, we'll call it tumas oihel, tumah by being under the same roofing or overhang covering. Sometimes this type of tumah is referred to by the term Tumas Bia. Bia meaning entrance into the same structure. The Gemara continues, but before we continue in the Gemara itself, let's take advantage of our Nosei Mivneh. We have a topic heading with a structural note, being that we are now encountering a triangle, and the triangle position, if you scan ahead in the sugi, you'll notice how it flips back and forth. This is because we have a ma'akav situation. If you look in the outside margin, we have a triangle, and in parentheses we indicate ma'akav. This is an attempt to keep track of the back and forth nature of the discussion. So with the point facing upwards, they represent she'elois, or kushyos, questions, or raising of difficulties. Maha mokor, what's the source? The chalik ben musgur u'muchlet be'inyan priu prima. We're going to be looking for the source that says that you should make a distinction between a musgar and a muchlat with regard to the issue of the hair and the tearing of the clothing. The triangle, when you see it pointing down, will be an attempt to provide answers to these questions. The Gemara asks a question. Mino hanimili. From where do we know that there's no prio prima by the musgar? The Gemara answers, Detoni. Now, we have a little one that will indicate that there's going to be a second approach a bit later. And if you skim down the page, you'll notice where the two appears. So the answer to the question of from where do I know this, Detoni Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchok Kamed Rav Yehuna. Rav Shmuel teaches the following Tanaic source. Now, Rashi points out that this pasuk will be featuring a mitzora that returns to a state of tahara, of purification, purity, from having been in a muskar state, meaning it's a person who had been in the waiting situation, and the Kohen eventually declares him that he his nega decreased in size, and therefore he no longer has to be in this waiting state. The pasuk says, "V'tiara Kohen mispachasi." So we have a person leaving Hezger, and we now darshan. What does v'toher mean? Tohor mi prima uprima deme'ikara. He is exempt from having a need to have done. Deme'ikara is a past tense expression, means from an initial requirement. He is exempt from an initial requirement of priya and prima. So, very simply said, a hesker, a mitzora that was behesker, did not have to practice priya u prima. Amar lei Rava, elameata. If you're going to darshan the word v'toher and come to such a conclusion, Gabi Zav, Dichtiv, in the case of Zav, which, well, fortunately we exposed ourselves just before in today's shiur to the issue of the Zav. It turns out in the case of Zav, Dichtiv, there's a pasuk. It says, V'chibes begodov v'toher. Hasam, in the case of the Zav, my vitoher me'ikora ika. What kind of initial obligation does Azav have that the pasuk is coming to exempt him from? There is no example of that. Elo tohor hashto milatame klicheres behesed afogav dehoder chozi lo mitame lemafreya. What this v'toher is teaching me is something not of a me'ikara nature, of an original nature, of an earlier situation, but rather it's telling me something. He's tohar right now. What is this halacha? So now we have to expand a little bit on what is being described. The zav, the pasuk says, is toivel, or he cleanses, he's toivel his clothing, and then he achieves tahara from right now. That's what tor hashta means. He's tor right now after he goes to the mikveh. And what do we mean he's tor right now?
A Zav is someone that's entitled to immerse himself on the seventh day of his Shiva Nikiyim, and he can go to the mikveh during the daytime, and as soon as he goes to the mikveh, he achieves Tahara. What happens, though, if before sundown, on that seventh day, he has, all of a sudden, a new Zav sighting? If he has a new Zav sighting, it undoes all of his counting. It undoes, it makes him tome all over again. In fact, there's a retroactive tumah. And that retroactive tumah will tell us the following. If he sees a second sighting, or he sees a sighting on that day that he went to the mikveh, the beds or the chairs that he happened to sit on after the after that immersion that he did earlier that day, they become tomei lemafreya. That means they become retroactively tomei. However, the immersion that he did is not of a complete waste, and that's the chiddush of this pasuk. Remember, in our earlier discussion today concerning the zav, we said there was a unique aspect that a zav has that others don't. That uniqueness was the issue of tumas kli cheres behesed. So this pasuk is saying that even though the zav who was toivel earlier that day, that has a new ziva sighting, becomes retroactively tomei, and that retroactive tuma affects the mishkav and moishav that he may have sat on earlier that day, even though he had sat on them after he went to the mikveh. Nevertheless, this retroactive feature declares them to be tomei. Nevertheless, if he had moved a kli cheres behesed, like we said before, he was holding a stick under his arm and moved and caused a, or he was holding a stick in his hand and moved a kli cheres, and the tip of the stick touched the kli, moved the kli cheres. If he were a real zav, the kli cheres would become tamei. This kli cheres that had been moved after he had gone to mikveh earlier that day will not become tamei through this retroactive tuma state is setting in at this point. Let's read that line again. Elo tohor hashto, he is tohor now after the tvila, milatame klicheres behesit, from that klicheres that he may have caused its movement, afogav dohodar chozi, even though he sees ziva later on that day, which creates a tumo lemafreya, lo mitame lemafreya. The kli cheres will not be included in that retroactive tumo. Well, by the same token, we can go back to our mitzora example where we saw the expression v'toher, where we saw the pasuk said v'tiaro akoyim mispachasi v'chibes b'gor v'toher. Hochanami, with regard to the tor mitoch hesker, tor hashto, militame bebio lemafreya. The mitzora that had been declared, free from its mitzora status, but later that day the tzoras broke out again. So we say that there is a tumo lemafreya as well. And that that tumah lemafreya, that retroactive tumah, could affect other things. However, with regard to, let us say, the issue of bia, meaning bia was entrance into the same house, which we said a real mitzora communicates tumah to people that are in the house at the same time. Let's say that our mitzora that we're just talking about now had received a green light from the kohen, meaning that the tzaras shrunk, and after that he walked into a house with other people or other vessels. He then leaves the house, and after that, after he leaves the house, the tzaras breaks out again. So we will tell you that the Torah means that even though there may be retroactive tumah in with regard to other things, those people or vessels that were in the house with him after he received the initial green light are not affected retroactively. Let's take a look at Rashi to see this on the fourth wide line under the Gemara. Hacha nami v'toher de mitzora. Tor hashta. He now achieves tahara, a certain level of tahara, let's say, because we're talking about the immediate declaration of the Kohen proclaiming that his discoloration had shrunk. So we say he's tahara now. Milatame bebiol imafreya. Michumrei mitzora. This is one of the unique stringencies to a standard mitzora. Shemetam adam v'kelim chosimim olabayis. By the way, this is paralleled to the idea of the Tumas Hesed by the Zav, which was unique to the Zav. This idea of Tumas Bia or Tumas Oihel that applies in the case of Mitzora is something unique to Mitzora. That it imparts Tuma to people and vessels that are in the same house with him. Even if on that same day the Tzaras comes back, Tohor, those people or vessels that were in the house with this mitzora after he had been declared tohor, they remain tohor. Kirichtiv, impasu tivsav, espas bor b'chulei, ahani le'tvila, the first tevila of the zav that leaves his hezker status. We mentioned before that the mitzora has a double immersion on the first day and on the seventh day. So we say that this tvila is effective l'tayrus hakelim haboinim olabayis l'fisha mitzora mitama bebia. In general, a mitzora does communicate tuma through entrance to the house with other people. At this point, though, in the Gemara, if we take stock of everything, we don't forget we're looking for a source that says that a hesker, that a mitzora musgar, does not practice priu prima. We thought from source number one that Vitoher would have taught that. At this point in the Gemara, though, we are saying that Vitoher does not teach that. Vitoher is not talking about an exemption of priu prima, but rather it's talking about the fact that a mitzora that after his tevila rishona, he thereby is relieved from tumas bia. Even in the event that later that day the tzaras breaks out again, there won't be a retroactive declaration of tumah to those people that were in the house with the mitzora after he had done his tevila rishona. So, but what's the source for the exemption of priyo prima for the musgar? Number two, elam arava mehacha. The pasuk says v'hatzorua asher boi hanega. Before we go further, we've included the pasuk on the inside margin. Let's read it together. It's vayikra perik yud gimel pasuk memhe. It says v'hatzorua asher boi hanega begod of you prumim v'roishia parua v'alsofim yate v'tomei tomei yikra. You can see in this pasuk there's a reference to begod of you prumim, the tearing of the clothing, and roishia yaparua, the hair being uncut. The pasuk Memvav says, "Kol yimei asher hanegabo yitma tomehu bodod yishev mechutz lamachne moishavo." And in this pasuk, there appears the word that the Gemara will be focusing on
Actually, we saw in the pasuk memhei the word bo, which the Gemara will be darshening it at the beginning of pasuk memhei. It had said v'atzur she boy hanega, and in pasuk memhei there was a reference to the priya and prima requirements. So Rava says in this pasuk, now turning back to the Gemara, v'atzur she boy hanega. In that pasuk, there is a requirement. There is a mentioning of the need for priya prima. Mi shitzorasu tluya begufo. That type of mitzora that his tzoras is, let's say, body ingrained. What we mean by that is he's not in a mere waiting period like a mitzora musgar, but he is bodily affected and he does not leave his tzoras until it actually leaves, as opposed to mere passage of time. So that's mishitzorasu tluya begufo. That's a mitzora muchlot. He requires priyo prima. Yotzazeh, to the exclusion of the other kind of mitzora, yotzazeh she'ein sorasu tluya begufo elo biyomim. The fellow who is a muzgar, he is called, his tzoras is not body dependent, so to speak, but rather he is time dependent, meaning that even though he does have a discoloration, if the discoloration does not expand in the passage after 2 weeks, he is free from his tzoras status. So from the word bo in the pasuk that deals with priya prima, we see that only the bo, the muchlot person, requires prima prima, and not the other kind, the musgar kind. He's not bow, he's not body focused, but rather time related. Now we have a question. This is a long question, and we've indicated that by the kuf in the little triangle to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara. Omar le Abaye, elo me'ato. If you're darshaning the word boy, kol yemei asher hanega bo yitmo. This was Pasuk Mem Vav that we have included on the side of the Gemara as well. This Pasuk says that, mentions the idea of sitting outside the community. So are you going to say that the word bo is also a limitation device? Are you going to say the following? Mi shetzorosu tlu begufo hu duton shiluach. Shiluach means being sent out of the community. That only the muchlot is sent out. V'she'ein soroso tluya begufo ein ta'un shiluach. And if he's a muskar, he's not body focused. His soros is not dependent on the body per se, but rather on the issue of time, that he does not require being sent out. Well, v'chitei machinami, and if you try to push that point, yeah, that's in fact a difference. But that's not true, v'akotani. But we learned in our Mishnah the following, and not only, the Mishnah is not enough, the Mishnah plus the inference from the Mishnah. We have learned above, v'akotani, ein bein mitzora muzgar, mitzora muchlad. There is no difference between these two, elo priyo prima. The issue of the hair and the clothing tearing. But as far as the need for being sent out of the community and communicating tumah through entrance at the same time with others to a house, the muchlat and the muskar are the same. So to review the question, if the focus on the word bo is an exclusionary expression or a limitation expression to a muchlat as opposed to a muzgar, this is not going to work out when you look at Pasuk Mem Vav, because in Mem Vav you've got a limitation expression, namely bo, and yet we do not limit the issue of Pasuk, the subject of Pasuk Mem Vav, namely the sending out of the community, is not limited to the muchlat, but includes the muskar as well. We are still searching, therefore, for a source or a basis of saying that only the muchlat practices priya uprima. Omar lei. So, in all likelihood, Rava is responding, because just before this we saw Abaye addressing Rava. So, Omale, Rava says back, Yemei kol Yemei. Basically, bo is exclusionary. So that in Pasuk Mem Hei, only the Mukhlat practices Priya Prima based on the word bo. The question then is, how come in Pasuk Mem Vav, when we deal with sending out of the community, we include the Musgar as well? That's because of another Gzeres HaKosov. Because it says, doesn't say just Yemei, it says Kol Yemei. L'rabois mitzor musgar l'shiluach. And you can see that in Pasuk Mem Vav. It says Kol Yemei, and that Kol is an inclusion expression, thereby including the Musgar as well for the din of Shiluach. Ihachi, if Kol Yemei is an inclusionary type expression, and it thereby is coming to include the Musgar as well, Tiglachas v'tziporim maitaimo loi, why, with regard to the haircut and the bird ceremony, do we not include the musgar? And in the brackets, all the Gemara is doing here in this bracketed section is simply to show that the musgar in fact is not included. But as far as the question that was just raised, the answer comes after the bracketed line where Omar Abaye responds. But in the meantime, the bracket line of Gemara simply backs this point up, namely that the question right now is, if Kol Yemei is including a musgar to be like the Mukhlat with regard to Shiluach, so why don't we include him also with regard to the haircut and the body, the hair removal and bird ceremony? Why not? Dikotoni, in fact, we learned Ein Bein Tohor Mitoch Heskel Torah Mitoch Mukhlat Elo Tiglachas Vitzorim, that there is a difference between someone who leaves his saras from a Hesker state as opposed to someone who left from the Mukhlat state, that only the Mukhlat brings the birds and does the Tiglachas. But if Kol Yemei is including the Musgar, so why don't we include him with regard to the Tiglachas and Siporim as well? Omar Abaye, Omar Kro. The pasuk that deals with birds and tiglachas, in effect, excludes the musgar. So that we have a push and pull situation where we will include the musgar with regard to shiluach. That was indicated in pasuk memvov. Truth is that pasuk memvov does not deal with tiglachas and birds. And therefore, when you turn to a pasuk that does deal with tiglachas and birds, we will see that the musgar, in fact, is excluded. So here we go in the Gemara. Omar Abaye, Omar Kro. The pasuk says, with regard to tziporim and tiglachas, v'yotza kain alichutz lamachne, v'nei nirpo nega hatzoras. And as we said, that pasuk is dealing with the birds. That's found on the side of our Gemara. We've included this. You'll notice we've included the Psukim from Perek Yudalid. There's Pasuk Gimel and Pasuk Dalid, and Pasuk Ches is needed as well in order to appreciate the issue of the Vigilaches Kol Saro, the hair removal. So in that Pasuk, you see it says he's Nirpa Negatzaras. And the drosha is Mishet Sorosut Libru Fuos. Who brings the birds and who does the hair removal? It's the Mitzora that requires healing. In other words, not just time passage, but healing. That's the Mukhlat. Yotzazeh, to the exclusion of the Musgar, She'ein Tzorosut Libru Fuos El Biyomim. He doesn't need refuah per se. He needs the passage of time and then the Kohen's ruling at the end of the 2 weeks. Someone like that does not need tziporim and tiglachas. The Mishnah. Ein bein sforim litfilim mezuzos. Sforim is a reference to the Tanakh, Torah, Nevi'im, Iksuvim. Those are called holy scrolls that contain the books of the Chumash, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim. There is no difference between them and Tefillin and Mezuzos. Tefillin, of course, we're referring to the
the parchment that's found inside the tefillin boxes, and the mezuzah is the parchment, the little scroll that's found inside the mezuzah. We would refer to the mezuzah case that you find on the doorpost. Truth of the matter is that there is a we're focusing here on the parchment inside. So the Mishnah says there's no difference between the svarim, tefillin, and mezuzah. Elisha svarim nichtovim b'chol loshon. Svarim can be written in any language. The tefillin mezuzahs einon nichtovas ela ashuris. Tefillin mezuzahs must be written in Hebrew. Shimon Liel Omer af b'svarim lo etiru shichtuvu ela yavanes. Shimon Liel says it seems to present a more limited approach than the Tanakhama, whereby even svarim are there is an allowance for Greek, but not for all languages. The Gemara infers, "Hal the toifron begidin ul tanis yadayim zev is a shoven." However, with regard to the sewing of the sections together with animal veins, with the begidin, and the tumas yadayim that these holy works impose on those who touch them, they are the same. In other words, svarim, tefillin, and mezuzahs. If there is a need for sewing them together, so you will have to use gidin and not, let's say, flax threads, not pishtan. And tumas yodayim, the communication, the rabbinic ruling that contact with them communicates tumas yodayim, they are all the same. The next piece of Gemara deals with the issue of the all the different languages. We notice on the outside margin the Nosei Mivneh heading with the volcano or trapezoid form featured. There is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a back and forth discussion. This discussion will continue down the next Omed Daf Tes, Omed Aleph. So with regard to our shiur, we conclude at this point our shiur for today.